Hello, and welcome back to the Zen Embodiment YouTube page. I've been doing these bare bones conversations, and they've been going really well. This is episode 8, and it is the moderator group for the Rinzai Discussion Facebook page. So welcome, everyone. So great to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
So I wanted to kind of start, I think it's kind of cool for the Facebook page even just to see, you know, who these people are and kind of introduce yourselves, and maybe we can just have a little bit of a free flow conversation, kind of a happy hour. So maybe we can start with Matt Daiho Wagner. What's your story and what brought you to Zen? I would love to hear that.
Sure. Pain, primarily. Yeah, so I had some pretty crushing anxiety and depression, lifelong, very existentially driven. And I didn't really have any other alternatives. So I went to a Catholic prep school, so maybe that helped set me right on the right path. So I had been looking for something for that entire time, and I just so happened to stumble upon a teacher that was in the area, and I began sitting with that group, that was right as I was beginning college. So I sat with that group the whole time, and had deepening practice along the way and a number of experiences along the way. And that profound dysfunction, I would say, that deep-seated anxiety and depression that started to resolve tremendously with practice. And it was no longer ruling my life. And I've had a number of experiences that that shifted that understanding tremendously. But it's kind of like this, the issue of when you start opening up that door and you see your life start to transform, it raises other questions. And I felt like I needed to dive deeper into it and to see just how far this goes. And so after I finished college, I got ordained and went to practice at Daibasatsu Zendo. And I was there for about a year and a half. And then Daibasatsu went through one of its cyclic patterns of implosion, and the training vibe or the environment wasn't really that conducive, at least not for me. It might have been conducive for other people, but with my various shortcomings, it wasn't something that I could really work with. So I transferred, I guess, to another monastery in the San Jacinto Mountains outside of LA with Tenshin Charles Fletcher Roshi, a Dharma heir of Maizumi Roshi. And I was there for another year and a half. So I finished out my 1,000 days. And then when that was up, I didn't really have a plan. It just kind of ended. And so I was in a little bit of a, I don't know, I don't want to call it free fall. Maybe I was in a little bit of a soul searching, how do I reintegrate back into society? So I moved to Los Angeles to live at the Zen Center in Los Angeles for a while. And so I studied with Egg Yoga Roshi, Wendy Nakao. And I was there for, I think, maybe months, maybe a little bit longer. And was going to school at the time. So I was going to school for Chinese medicine. And that took control of all of my time. And so for about 10 years, I put things on hold and studied, went overseas, did some internships, came back. And after I had resettled in my college town in Madison, Wisconsin, there was this growing need to reconcile parts of my past, and those parts being practice parts, to really build a relationship with that again and embrace that. And that looked like finding a community. And I had looked somewhat in the years prior, but there was never anything that really resonated with me. I wanted to continue in the Rinzai tradition. I wanted to continue koan practice. And there's a certain vitality that we all recognize that is essential to that kind of practice. And so I was deeply needing that too. That's when I started seriously looking. That's when Meido Roshi moved up from Chicago to really get things started residentially with Korenji. So I think that I met up with him, I think maybe the second month that he started offering any kind of meditation in Madison. And we had a Zen evening, a couple sits in a coffee shop the first time we met. And it was just a very honest experience with a complete lack of pretension, and just it just felt like a practice environment that had a lot of integrity to me, so which was essential based upon my past experiences. So I thought, all right, I can do this. This is in line with what I'm looking for. There's a resonation here. That's kind of what got me into the back into the fold, so to speak. And then I've been just along this ride ever since, and here I am.
Very cool. Thank you. That's really interesting. Yeah. Who was it again in LA? Who was that? Can you say that again? In Los Angeles?
Right. So her name was Egyoku Roshi. Her name is Wendy Nakao.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Interesting. Cool. How about you, Jim?
Yeah. So the way I came to Zen practice, so I was a pretty moody teenager and really didn't have much direction as a young man. And I started taking Aikido, martial arts, Japanese Budo, when I was about 18. And my teacher just happened to be Mr. Meido Moore over here. So I trained with him in Aikido for a few years. And after Aikido, we would have the Zen guys would go sit. So we'd have an Aikido class. And then after that, we'd all get kicked out of the dojo. And then the Zen guys would sit. And I was getting ready to leave one day. And Meido said, you need to stay and sit. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I said, okay. So I sat with Tom Nagel, who's one of our senior guys at Dai Yuzhenji. It was an amazing experience. It was the most amazing experience I had that never, ever happened again. I saw swirling colors, and the room was like waves. The floor was like waves, and I had such peace. And I thought, whoa, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. And it's been a struggle ever since, every sit after that. I started sitting, and we did all kinds of crazy stuff. We were a bunch of young guys. So Tom had us doing all kinds of real serious hara training. He'd walk on our bellies, and he would make us shout for 20, 30 minutes, different kiais, and just doing all kinds of things to really build the hara. which all kinds of things that I took for granted, just figured that all different Zen groups did, which I found later on that it's fairly unique to Rinzai and specifically to our lineage through Amori Sogen. So it's really the more that I practice and the more that I start to embody a lot of these different practices, even years later, which I fought for many years. I hated chanting for many, many years. And I had an experience a year or two ago that I just suddenly started to love it. And I do it every day now. But as I trained more, I started to see, I thought as Aikido and Zen as two different disciplines, and they eventually just became one. And now there's no distinction between the two in terms of the way you use the body and the way you use the breath and the way that you interact with life. So I trained with Tom for several years, and then I started formal koan training with David Miller Roshi, who is the abbot of Daiyuzenji. And through that, I'm also involved with Korenji, which is the sister temple of Daiyuzenji. So I make it up from time to time to go visit up in Korenji, and Mado puts me to work outside, especially with the thorn bushes and the rose bushes. But it's just a practice that has penetrated every part of my life, from being a father to being a son, a husband, to all those different roles that we take on. And there's that one thread through all of them. It's that Zen training and trying to maintain the no self as you wear all these different hats throughout the day, and trying not to get too attached to those different roles. So that's kind of my short story. These guys have much more interesting stories than I do, so I'm looking forward to hearing about them as well.
Love it. I love it. Oh, really great. Thank you. And I love Jim's presence on behind the scenes. We're often discussing things with the Rinzai page, and I love Jim's perspective. If we ever get a little too into Zen, you know, I feel like Jim will kind of give us a really sane kind of, we get too zenny or something, he'll give us something really sane. I feel like I love that. Thank you, Jim. I love the physical aspect, and I really appreciate that. And I love how you said it just soaks into your pores. Everybody, I love that. Genryo, Bradley.
Yeah.
Okay, she must.
Okay, well, so I guess I already told my story once, so I'll try to keep it short. I was into, when I was a teenager, I was into hardcore. I was in bands and kind of a crusader sort of feeling to the whole endeavor. Kind of, it was a do-it-yourself thing, and we got these out-of-town bands to come and play. We thought we were gonna change the world by putting on shows and producing this music, and there was a real kind of passion to it and intensity that really meant a lot to me then. And I went away to college. I studied poetry in college and got into the beats, and that was the trail that led me back to Han Shan and original Chinese and Japanese poetry, which got me interested in Zen. I read a couple of Zen books and found my local Zen group, and met a really, really great person there, Tim Williams, who ran that group and kind of inspired me. He had been to Japan and to India and all around. When I finally graduated, he was like, you know, there's this place in Japan that you can go and just sit and see how deep you can go. And so I went for it, and I ended up at Sogenji. I was there for several years, 3.5 years. This was really quick. Am I going too fast?
Great, I love it.
Ended up coming back to the States, and sort of similar to Matt's story, it was then a long trip after that. That was 2001, and my wife and I, you know, we moved around a lot, went to a lot of different towns, and I tried sitting with a lot of different groups, had some really good experiences and some kind of ho-hum experiences, but never encountered again that intensity that I found at Sogenji, which was kind of a logical extension of the intensity of the hardcore music and that scene when I was a kid that kind of meshed so well together. And so that's kind of what I was just looking for and never finding. I actually ended up in Chicago. My wife went to grad school in Chicago and I met Mado, and apparently I met Jim, and I don't really remember, but that was like a long time ago. So because I started Aikido with Mado at Shinshinkai. So I practiced there for a year, and actually I went to their Zazenkai once in a while, but it wasn't, I was still too raw from leaving Japan and I wasn't ready for it. But that seed was there, it was planted, and I went on, and things really got real when my children, or my son was born. We were, moving around, it was kind of a hard situation, and that was when I started, actually that's when you and I met, I think, that because we met at Jundo's funeral, the guy that ran my sitting group in my college town. He passed away really suddenly, really young. And they had a funeral for him at Tahoma. So I went back because Corey went to Sogenji actually the year I left. So we had never met before. We'd had some correspondence, I think. But then, at Jundo's funeral, we actually met and started talking. And then from then, I started reading Corey's blog, and his work kind of helped me and started, like Dio said, it's just that process of thinking, well, I need to do something with this. I need to reintegrate this somehow in my life, this important thing, and pick up these threads again. So that was kind of what started that, and came to Florida, moved to Florida a few years ago, and I got back into Aikido here, which has been really great. And I picked up Mado's book, and I was like, oh my gosh, I wasn't just making this up all along. Here's somebody else. This is exactly what I was experiencing in Japan. I had kind of given up on it. So that was just incredibly inspiring to find that again. And then let's see, it was through Greg Soden's podcast. He interviewed Mado, which I listened to, and then he interviewed you, and I was like, wait a minute, I know both of these people. And that's kind of how I got involved. Here we are.
Actually, I think I visited, and you were still there. You were still at Sogenji when I visited. I remember you were there. Remember, and you were like,
is that right? That might have been like my last day or something.
Yeah, right? Right. I think you were like Dushario or something. Maybe I don't know. You were way down. No, maybe not. But you were way down on the pond.
That could be. Yeah, I was Dushario helper for a little bit. Yeah.
But Genryo's pretty famous. Actually, he had these big like glasses. And he's kind of clunky, but Genryo's kind of he's well known. There are stories about Genryo at Sogenji.
Yeah, I've always wondered where you got your information.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's some legend there. I'm sure I'm making up some stuff. Awesome, cool. I guess I'll go. We'll save the best for last. Yeah, right. I was a big sports guy, and I was a really sensitive kid, and I felt like I couldn't really engage with reality. Like I couldn't touch reality. I knew that there was a way to connect with it, but I felt like I just couldn't reach it. And I had some experiences as a kid with psychic stuff and all this stuff. I knew there was this other world out there for me to explore. And I really didn't know how to do that. And except in sports, I would do things in sports and, I would go into these open states, these kind of flow states, whatever you want to call it, types of samadhi. And I found a freedom in that. But then mostly my life was not very connected, and I felt pretty at odds with most everything I was doing, although knowing about this freedom available, and that was sort of torture for me. So that kind of came to a head, and I my body sort of tightened up in this really weird way, and I was super into the beats and all this, and I actually wrote Gary Snyder, and I was like, I'm gonna go be a farmer poet, and I'm gonna go, and I wanna go to Japan and train, and wrote him, and Gary said, wait, just go to this place on Whidbey Island first. They're starting a real place there. So go there and see what that's like first. And so I went there and hated it, you know. The head monk was like this kind of handsome Los Angeles kind of charismatic guy, and he was pushing my buttons. He was like hitting me right where I needed it, you know, and I was so mad at him, and I left. I'm getting out of here, this Zen stuff. I don't want to be a monk, you know. And I went, and I was traveling around. I was in Cuba, and I can't enjoy Cuba. What? If I can't enjoy Cuba, then I've got to figure out something inside. And so I somehow, over time, made it back to, you know, the States. And then I wrote Yusan, who's my former guest on the page, on the YouTube channel. And he said, you can come back. And I said, I have fond memories. Somehow I had fond memories. And so I went back. And when I went back, they were having an O session, and the Roshi was there. And, you know, meeting, so I went in, and I had lunch with them, and the Roshi, you know, probably heard about me, this wild guy, you know, who's a pain in the ass or whatever, and come have tea. And so I went and had tea with the Roshi, and when I walked into the room, his presence was so unbelievable to me. It was like he was so physically present. I didn't even know what to do with it. I was overwhelmed, and so I'm sitting there with him, and he's, you know, he's like 5'2" or something, and he has the deepest voice. It's very strange at first, and he's talking to you, and Chisan's there laughing and talking a lot, and the Roshi's just this like other being. He's like an alien, and I said, well, you know, I'm drawn in. I'm something about him is overpowering me. And I say, well, why would someone like me go to Sogenji? Why would I do that? And he says, what do you think, you know? And I said, well, depends on the person, depends on what the person thinks, you know? And he says, no, to realize why you were born, you know? And I had no idea what to do with that. I had zero, I didn't have a place to put that, you know? And so I stuck around for the rest of the retreat. I sat in one of these chairs with the knees, you know, and it killed me. You know, I was just in agony, you know. And the last night, I had an experience, you know, where I could, you know, the time stop, you know, all this stuff, and could read everybody's thoughts, you know, and my breathing went somewhere, you know, and so I had like a big carrot, the carrot leading me. This is what's possible. You can go deep in this, you know. So I didn't get up for Kinhin. I was at the Gaitan. I didn't move. So then I went back to my brother's couch in Seattle. No way, I'm not going there, you know. But somehow they lured me over to visit. They lured me over to visit in the summer. And so I went to Sogenji as a chaperone for this Waldorf group. It was very interesting. I got pulled along to that. And I went to Sogenji, and partly it was like this, it was like, where am I? This yuppies playing dress up? You know, what's going on here? You know, but also it was something really profoundly deep was happening. And I was out of my element. I had no idea what to do. Suffering. And the Sanzen, I got to have Sanzen with the Roshi. It just blew me away. Forever changed me. And so I came back on that trip, got figured out how to, I did this horrible job to get back there, and I went for several years over there. It keeps growing, the number of years I was there keeps growing. I think it's up to 20 now. It's there for 20 years now. Yep. I'm joking. But yeah, no, it was great. It was totally changed my whole life. I meeting the Roshi was like meeting someone always in that key place I had found in sports. Someone with moving from a place of total freedom in a certain way for me. So followed him, and it was a completely transformative experience. Came back after coming home to start a family, which was sort of infamous, and was ordained, came back, and had to get away for a while. Went to Minneapolis and tried to find a way to express myself. Some of the experiences I had there, I needed to find I had something to offer, and I didn't know how to do it. And it was like the robe for me had been a medium I could use, and that I needed a new medium. And so eventually I get into healing work, and then I started writing this blog. And the blog was a way for me to become clearer about expressing these things. So in order to say something true, I had to find that true thing and be able to express it. And so instead of feeling awful whenever I talked about this stuff, I started to feel a little bit better. Oh, I'm actually saying something real here. And so then that grew for a while. I ended up on a couple of Facebook pages, and I would write something, and then Nate O'Moore would come on, and he would write it better. He would be more clear. He would always be a little more articulate. It was always better. I really appreciated that. And just really, I was really impressed by Mado, and just like Genro, just feeling like, oh yeah, this feels really good. This feels very similar. This feels embodied. This feels like a really deep practice. And so, eventually got on this moderator group and have been really enjoying being friends with this wonderful group for months now, maybe a year. What is it? A year? Something like that.
At least,
yeah, no, and it's been wonderful for me to have, you know, they say friends of the past or whatever. It's been wonderful. Anyway, I think that's my story. If I wasn't too long, could we go on to Mado Moore, please?
It's like really amazing to talk to you guys because I don't think people know, but this is actually the first time that like Corey and I have talked in real time to each other. You know, we talk on the forum, but I feel like I've been friends with you for years, you know, so it's really interesting, right? Yes. But my story is, again, kind of like similar to a lot of what you guys described. I think a lot of us were similar kinds of kids, and I was moody, too sensitive, strange experiences and phenomena. The world was, you know, I always felt like I was kind of right up against the veil of something. There was something just that I just couldn't get my hands on, but it was, I could feel it, I could sense it, and prone to depression. Also, what I now recognize was probably pretty severe depression. But I wasn't interested in Zen. I didn't know what Zen was at all, but I knew I was interested in Buddhism. I guess I arrived at that interest pretty young age in grade school. I think my path was reading the Transcendentalists, which led me to the Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads, which led me to the Dhammapada. And when I read the Dhammapada, I was like, okay, this is something. This is something. I want this, whatever it is. So I ended up doing religious studies in school. And I ended up going overseas my junior year to a Buddhist studies program in Bodh Gaya in India, which is, many people know, it's a international pilgrimage site. It's where the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree. So there's monasteries from many traditions there. And I got to train with Theravadan teachers, Tibetan teachers, like people that are amazingly eminent that I had no idea they were so important. When I met them, I'm sitting in a room with a guy that, when I tell people I sat in a room with that guy, they're like, how did you even meet him? I don't know. Somehow these kind of doors opened in a very strange way. But I came back from that. I had gotten really sick there. I ended up with TB and I was recovering from that. And that's when Aikido became important, not as a something I really wanted to pursue, but I figured it would help me to be healthy again. And that's when I met the first of my three main teachers, Toyota Sensei, who was a Aikido master, but he was also a lay Dharma heir in Omori Sogen's line. And I met him, I guess, right after I got back from India. And right when I was getting ready to graduate from college, grabbed me basically. And he said, "What are you doing after school?" I said, "I don't know. I like to study Zen. I like to do Aikido." He said, "Okay, come to Chicago with me." So I did. And a couple months later, I was there. And I don't know why, except that something about his presence, maybe like a core of your experience with Harada Roshi, I mean, something about his atmosphere just sucked me in. You know, this guy was like a force of nature. Like a furomyo standing in front of you, like you could almost see the fire coming off of him. But he was also very personable, and he was a charmer, and he was laughing with this big crocodile smile with a beer in one hand and salty peanuts in the other hand, sitting at the bar just regaling you with stories. That was, I just wanted to be around him. At that point, I don't think I would have cared what he taught. I just wanted to follow him. As it happened, he was also a Zen master in the Rinzai line of Omori Sogen. So couple months later, he introduced me to Hosokawa Roshi, who's the teacher I did most of my sanzen with. And of course, that's a line that came through Chosenji in Hawaii. And Toda Sensei's dojo in Chicago was also a Betsuin, a branch temple of Chosenji. So that's kind of how I got into the Rinzai Zen world. But I wasn't seeking it. I didn't know the difference, or if there was a difference between Soto Zen, Rinzai Zen, Zen Tibetan Buddhism. I just knew I wanted to do Dharma practice, meditation practice of some kind. But that quality that Toda Sensei had, that was the main thing. So that was my story until he died. I lived in his dojo for 7 years, and then he passed away a few years after that. And he had the dream, along with Tanoi Roshi and Omori Roshi, to establish a sodo, a real Rinzai Zen training monastery in the heartland. But Toda Sensei died before he could bring that to fruition, so I felt like I should try to do it. And he started with no money. And advertised on Facebook. What's now the Rinzai Zen discussion page was originally just the Korenji Facebook page where we did all our fundraising. And somehow we raised enough money to buy the land. Then we had no money again. Somehow we raised enough money to build the Zendo. We dedicated it. We said, okay, now we have a monastery, but we had no place to live. And then we had no money again. And then someone came along who helped us with that. It was just this, again and again, this weird door is always open. And now we have Korenji. And we've been here for 2.5 years now. We're in our, well, fifth ango now. Well, we're actually in Seikan right now, but we're going to start our fifth ango. And I'm totally unqualified to be here. I'm an okay teacher, but I'm a bad abbot. I have no idea how to handle the people or the interpersonal dynamics or any of that stuff at all. But we're here. So I'm, like you, Corey, I'm really grateful for this group, because one of the things that I think people experience in this kind of role is some sort of loneliness. And the feeling of not having peers around and people that you can just really talk to about that kind of monastic experience and what people go through and the craziness that happens and the wildness that happens. And it's really nice. People on the discussion page, like you said, don't know maybe some of the discussions we have behind the scenes, where I find them really supportive just to be able to vent to you guys and get your advice. So really grateful for it, for your podcast, for everything you're doing, and all you guys. Thank you. That's my story.
Thank God. Beautiful. Emilio, I think you wanted to give a story.
What?
I think you wanted to give a Zen story.
A Zen story?
Yeah, like a training story.
Oh, geez. There's a lot. There's so many. What do you want to hear about?
How about just like training life? You know, I mean, what's like in a Rinzai training life? Well,
actually, you know, after I talked to you the first time and you asked me what it was that I loved about training, and then going back and listening to that, what I went straight into talking about how cold it was. Yeah, and I thought, what a dumb answer that was, because what it really was the people, you know. And since I've left then, you know, that's what I didn't appreciate at the time. And I, you know, looking back through all my life, you run into these really amazing, vibrant, shining people. And you just think that's how it is, and that you're always going to be surrounded by that kind of person. And then suddenly you're not. and you feel, and you start to feel like Obi-Wan Kenobi in the desert or something. But yeah, there were just, there were so many amazing people there. And that's what I loved about it. I realize now.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was weird. I forget from everything everybody said, I forget who said it, but yeah, there was, we did crazy stuff. It was just, it was totally nuts.
That's a good thing to ask though. What do you love about training? Anybody, that's a beautiful thing you said, Daniel. Anyone else want to chime in about that?
I like the constantly subjecting yourself to fear, and then that amazing feeling when you overcome that. You take a little step up into something and you expand your capacity. That's there's no substitute for that feeling. I almost want to say it's an addictive feeling, right?
Yeah, you know, in terms of training, I think that my favorite part of training is kind of what Mato just said, is pushing yourself beyond where you think, past your limit or past where you think you can go. And not physically to cause damage, but emotionally or psychologically, maybe is the better way to say it. And you can do that through the body, you can do that physically, but pushing yourself farther than you thought and having that same elation or that same experience and thinking, wow, that was farther than I thought I could go. That's what I really enjoy, especially when you're really having a hard session, maybe like that last night or that second to last morning, and you say, I got another day and I have to go, and I don't know if I can do it. And realizing it at the end of the session, saying, oh, it wasn't that bad. You survived. You didn't die. So I think my favorite part of training is being able to take that feeling and bring that to the rest of your life, where a bad day is really not such a bad day.
Yeah, I think for me, there's something really uncanny about it. Training is the only thing that feels natural, the only thing that feels right. And in training, there's this, it's connecting with this deep sense of integrity. Like you're there and you're with it, and you're so in sync. And in that moment itself, that when you're not, something just feels wrong. Something feels a little bit like messed up and weird and perverted. And the trick is then always extending that training further and further and further. And so that, you know, your training becomes every moment of the day, no matter where you are. And those reminders of the practice are essential in that regard. But that training aspect is like, there's a real heart connection to just the way things are, the way that the universe is, or the way that reality is, that it feels like the only thing that's right, if that makes any sense.
Sorry, I could talk about the time me and Gi-san didn't sleep. Do you know that story?
Yeah. Gozo, please.
I think it was probably the second, maybe the third Rohatsu when I was there. It was O-session, so there was no talking. So it's not like we discussed it or anything, but it was cold enough. We were sitting Yaza inside the Zendo, and it was kind of like we were sitting right across from each other, and he wasn't going to sleep and I wasn't going to sleep. So we just kind of kept staying up. And we ended up not sleeping the whole Rohatsu, and it was the Baito that did it. We had the big jug of Baito. There was like a kind of a thermos jug of Baito, and every hour or so we would get up and pour each other a Baito. And, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, you say, oh, we sat all night, but all night is only 4 hours. It wasn't like, you know, that crazy, but we ended up, we just kept doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. And eventually, I don't, Kyo-san was Jikijitsu, and I think he figured out what was going on, and he told the Roshi. So by like the fourth night, the Roshi started coming down at 2 a.m, and he would sit with us for like an hour. And it was very cool. But yeah, the only thing that came out of it was that by the end, I my head felt just like a basketball. And that was all that came of it for me. You know, I don't recommend that. But like a couple of you guys were saying, it was like after that, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, you don't have to sleep. You don't have to lay down. You don't have to. You can, it was like this whole world of possibility opened up. You know, that's just what you think. You think if I don't lay down for a week, I'll die or something. So then, yeah, so I kept it going for a while. I know you did that too. But.
I did for a time, yes. I found it very, very helpful. Someone was asking about that today, actually. Like people were saying, you know, how do you know to do those things? You know, like people are dealing with sort of Tonden energy, and how do you know when to decide to be like the hero? You know, you go and do these heroic things, you know, and you see people who maybe aren't ready, they'll try to do that, and then they're really cracked. You know, they're not really ready to sit up all night, you know, often. And it's like an idea. Oh, I'm going to sit Yaza all night, because that's what I'm supposed to do. You know, and you see that, and they really don't do well with that. But it's more that the sitting will get to a point where it's overflowing. And then it's like, oh, I want to stay up. I've got to stay up. I could go in give up now and go cut that corner or whatever, but oh, my sitting is telling me I'm supposed to keep going, and so it's not an idea at that point, and that's the sitting and the essence starts to get to a certain point, and then it overflows. And somebody was asking about that today, and I it's a really beautiful important, I think, to talk about somehow.
Yeah, I think there's just a kind of curiosity, like, you know, what would happen, yeah, you know, if we tried this? And it's in, you know, there's all these old, you read the old stories, and they're like, were they just making that up, or
yeah,
is that really possible, you know?
Yeah.
And that is an interesting phenomenon, especially when you're by yourself, forcing yourself to do those things rather than being forced, or I shouldn't say forced, anybody's ready or able to get up and leave, but without the watchful eye of a Jikijistan or whoever it might be, but a solo retreats, or especially as I think we can all speak, and anybody that's watching this during the pandemic, we have a lot more time that we can sit and get into this stuff and spend a lot more time playing with the limit, or playing with that, riding that energy through something that might be uncomfortable, or something that maybe not even uncomfortable, it's something maybe we've never done before, something unknown. As Maida was saying, sometimes the fear isn't like a fight or flight fear, but it's the fear of never doing something. I've never sat an hour before. I can't do it. Well, sit there for an hour. I bet you can. You might be in a little bit of pain, but you'll survive. So just, it's really interesting in those solo kind of activities, and I know that Daiho and I have talked about this, that this is really a solitary practice for the most part. Even if you're in a sangha, you're with yourself, you're dealing with your stuff, and being able to deal with that stuff on the cushion or in movement or whatever it might be, for me is really exciting.
I'd like to say what I love about training real quick, if that's okay. I think what I love about training is, and I'm not really in a real serious organization right now in terms of training. I'm pretty much on my own. I'm kind of Ronin right now. But what I love about training is that it seemed to take take me to this, shave everything down to just completely what's essential, and then having to discover what's real in that, you know, so all my ideas evaporate when having to force to go into this most, you know, my name's Ichigen, means one source, this one point, this one source, and seeing what happens from there. And that's training is about that for me. It's what comes out of that? And that's totally mysterious, and it changes, and it's, but moving from that place is what really interests me. And it's what interests me out in the world too. And I think maybe we can talk, just, we have a couple more minutes. Maybe we can talk about what we're hoping for Zen in, you know, the West. I don't know if I want to say the West, because Australia is not really the West, but out of Asia, what are we hoping for Zen to flourish? What are we hoping for? I'm hoping someone can say something about that.
Everyone's shy.
Are we done? Are we done?
Everyone's worried. Everyone's worried.
Man, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I'll go.
I mean,
oh, yeah. Please. Okay.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, we all of us here talk a lot about what we call the embodied aspect of practice and not over psychologizing practice, but the practice just in your bones, and the experience that comes out penetrates into your bones, and that's why it transforms you so tremendously. And that's, I don't know what form it's going to take, but as long as we can maintain that thread, I guess that's not a failure. But that's my worry, is that, as we've often talked as a group, we don't see a lot of it out there, or we sometimes see that emphasis lacking. So, you know, there's that traditional saying that a Zen teacher, they want to transmit their lineage, they should try to find at least one or at least a half of a human being who can carry on for them, you know, and I think all of us, we could aspire to be in that position and find a half human being to carry on that aspect of the training, because I think there's going to be Zen, I think there's going to be Buddhism, but the Zen approach, the whole being, whole existence, body mind approach, I hope we don't lose that. So how to do that? I don't have an answer, but I feel like there has to be a place like Korinji where you can just really dig in, like Sogenji, of course. But there also has to be this amazing, creative, wild expression out on the streets, and those two worlds have to do this somehow. So I hope we can find a way to do that. This, we're going to do it, this group.
That's right. What were you going to say, Jim?
I was going to say, kind of riffing off of what Mato said about the transformation. You know, I don't have any aspirations to be a teacher, but I do aspire every day to be a Zen person or a Zen student. And I'm hoping that just that presence can spill into other people in my life, people that I work with, my family, my children, and maybe have some kind of influence for transformation for them. Or maybe I teach Aikido, so maybe there's an Aikido student that maybe one day heads up to Korinji and becomes the Dharma heir, or the Dharma heir of my teacher. I don't have those aspirations necessarily, but I do have aspirations to inspire people to be better than they were the day before. And for me, this has been the easiest, well, maybe easy is the wrong word, the most simple and the quickest path for that kind of transformation. So just at a very small level, just walking the earth, hoping that the work that I continue to do spills into other people's lives as well.
You're like a Zen Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah. Just tossing little seeds of Zen everywhere.
Wandering the world. I love it. Beautiful. Right.
Yeah, I guess just to add to what you guys are saying, my hope for Zen in the out of the East is that it doesn't lose its sense of magic and wonder, that this is a deeply transformative practice, then you have to be passionate about it. And your passion mirrors it too. And I would hope that people can really connect to that, and that it doesn't become some dead and heady, overly cognizized experience that doesn't have any oomph to it. So if we can hold on to some vitality, I think that we'll be doing good.
Oh, you've been real.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can echo everything everyone else has said, that as what was so precious about, like I said, like finding Mado's book, finding this group, talking to all of you guys, is that there's this aliveness, the in the bonesness, the intensity of what training can be, this difficult to find, this rare, and it's kind of precious. And just having these conversations, I think people need to hear that, you know, it's possible, that it's real, that there's, you know, this feeling the energy into the tips of your fingers and making that your zazen, like, in your whole life, that it's not just another thing to do, you know, that it's, you know, a very real, very visceral, very intense thing that can transform your life, that like Dio said, that's, there's some magic to it, there's some amazement to it, there's some wonder. And too often, you know, I've seen that, you know, missing, you know, not, or it's just like another class, or it's just another activity to add into your schedule. And it shouldn't be that, you know, it can be so much more.
I guess I want to kind of, there's an essence that comes through with Zen that, that's kind of what I'm interested in. And I'm hoping that the gardener, that Zen will infiltrate the culture enough that the gardener outside is moving in such a way that I see her or him and I say, well, that really feels like they have essence, and that feels like Zen to me. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for, is that it bleeds out, that it becomes part of what the culture is about, and that there are these deep places where people can go, like Korinji, where people can go and discover that and deepen that, and then it bleeds out, and the dancer or the gardener, you see them and it inspires you to somehow discover something. I think that's what interests me so much. Any closing thoughts? Y'all are great. It's been great just hanging out with you. Yeah, we haven't talked, so it's been really, really great. Thank you. And it's so great to just see your faces and to hang out with Mado. That's pretty special. I put on a sound movie.
We're gonna hang out in person sometime. We should film that.
I can't wait. We all have to go hang out at Karinji sometime. Yeah. Please.
Come. Please come.
Okay. Great. So I guess that's episode 8. Thank you so much. And I hope this is a benefit to somebody out there who's looking for something, and maybe they'll join the group and they get to know us a little bit better. Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Sure.
Ooh, okay. Bye-bye. Thank you. Let's see. I'm gonna stop here.